The marshal call court to order.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Frisch, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Clary, the Honorable Jennifer L. Frisch presiding.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is October 20, 2021. We have six cases on our calendar this morning. We're here on our first matter, which is A210940, in the matter of the civil commitment of Nicholas Scott Thompson. Counsel, I'm going to ask that you mute your microphone if you are not speaking. The marshal will be showing a running clock of your time. Please keep an eye on that clock. You'll each have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and the appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use that. I'll ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. And with that, counsel, we're ready for you to begin.
My name is Victoria Herr, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Nicholas Thompson. He is present and observing. Thank you.
Counsel, your argument?
Your Honors, this case rests on the issue of whether or not Mr. Thompson has the capacity to consent to or refuse neuroleptic medication. In this particular case, an independent court examiner was appointed by the Jackson County to examine Mr. Thompson. The court examiner opined that Mr. Thompson does have the capacity to consent to or to refuse neuroleptic medication. And in this particular case, Mr. Thompson is refusing the administration of neuroleptic medication. He opines that Mr. Thompson is aware of his situation, why he is in the hospital. He is aware that if he does not take neuroleptic medication, that it could result in a longer hospitalization. The court case seems to center around the fact that he disagrees with his mental health diagnosis, and therefore that's indicative of the fact that he lacks capacity. However, that is contrary to statute and it is contrary to the law. A person's diagnosis with a mental health illness or disagreement with a medical provider's practitioner's recommendations and diagnosis in of itself is not an indication that he lacks capacity. In this particular case, the record and the court transcript clearly show that Mr. Thompson has the capacity and that he was able to verbalize that the reason why he is refusing neuroleptic medication is because he wants to be alert. He wants to be able to communicate and work with his criminal attorneys on his pending and underlying criminal charges.
Counsel, confused. Is the argument that you're making now different than the arguments that are set forth in your briefs?
No, Your Honor. I believe that there is no, that the court misapplied, that there is no clear and convincing evidence that he lacks the capacity to consent to or to refuse neuroleptic medication. And therefore, I'm asking that the district court's order imposing neuroleptic medication be remanded.
Which finding by the district court, in your view, is not supported by clear and convincing evidence? Which paragraph of the district court's order, can you refer me to what you're referencing?
Yes, Your Honor, if you give me just a second to get to the court's order, the addendum. I apologize, I don't have that up.
It just seems to me that the district court credited certain evidence to substantiate its findings that clear and convincing evidence exists in this particular case. Is there something erroneous about those findings?
Well, I believe that the erroneous finding is that there was clear and convincing evidence to support that my client lacks the capacity to make the decision against neuroleptic medication. And I believe that there is an erroneous application in giving weight to the fact that even though there was no significant changes in his behavior after being on neuroleptic medication for a little over a year, that they would still continue to impose neuroleptic medication. And so...
Counsel, could I interrupt for a minute?
Mm-hmm, yes.
The court found that your client felt that he wasn't mentally ill, despite good evidence to the contrary. Do you deny that there is evidence of mental illness?
I do not deny that there is. However, I do understand that my client disagrees with the diagnosis. And in the order, number 10, where it indicates that he lacks that capacity. The belief is that even with his mental health diagnosis and even with the symptoms that he seems to be exhibiting, that in of itself does not indicate that he lacks the capacity, because it's clear that he has the capacity, that he is weighing his options. And there is also evidence in the history of his case that prior to the administration of any neuroleptic medication, he was able to restore competency well enough to be discharged prior to his readmission. And so the finding that he lacks capacity simply because he disagrees with the mental health diagnosis and that he has, that he suffers from the particular diagnosis, the mental health that he is diagnosed with, is not a clear indication or a definitive indication that simply because of that, that he lacks the capacity to make the decision.
Well, I agree. It can be a circular argument that if you deny you're mentally ill, then you must have a problem when you're, but there is evidence that he is mentally ill, and there were two experts, and as Judge Frisch just indicated, the court made credibility determinations and believed that Dr. Lassen was more effective or more credible than Dr. Doherty, and in any case found that your client's denial of being mentally ill in the face of the evidence that he was mentally ill went directly to the issue of capacity. And you're suggesting that shouldn't occur?
I am suggesting that perhaps that is a misapplication of the law in determining capacity, because I believe that the statute clearly outlines what is needed to determine capacity, whether a person has capacity or not. And that is outlined in 253B.092 subdivision 5. And the arguments that were made in district court was that he has the capacity to make decision regarding the administration of neuroleptic medication because he does have an awareness of his situation, including the reason why he's hospitalized and the consequences of refusing treatment. The record also reflects that he has an understanding of the treatment with neuroleptic medication, the risks and the benefits and the alternative. And he clearly indicated that the reason why he's refusing is that he wants to be clear-minded and not be under the sedative effect of these neuroleptic medication so that he can work with his legal defense. He is able to communicate verbally his choice to not have to take neuroleptic medication while he was under court order, he was compliant with the order because he was aware that he was under the court order to do so. However, he makes a very clear decision that he does not wish to be treated with neuroleptic medication, that he has been taking it for over a year with little effect, other than the fact that it was making him sleepy and that he was unable to effectively work with his defense team. His disagreement with the recommendation for neuroleptic medication clearly is not evidence that his decision to refuse neuroleptic medication is an unreasonable one. So I believe all of these criteria has been met and that the evidence is clear and convincing that they are all there. However, the district court's emphasis that by virtue of the fact that he does suffer from a mental illness and that he disagreed with that was perhaps given more weight and probably carried the entirety of the weight of the decision to say that he lacks capacity while ignoring the other factors that needed to be considered as well.
So if I could just ask a quick question, is there anything, now you've talked about that the main reason that your client does not want to be or continue on neuroleptic medication is because it would interfere with his ability to interact with his counsel. Is there any evidence in the record on that?
Other than the information that is contained in the transcript, I was not the attorney of the underlying commitments. I was just appointed for the appeal. And based on the information that I review, that has been a consistent basis that he has given both to the examiner as well as to the staff at his treatment facility.
Is there anything else this morning?
Other than the fact that, you know, all of the criteria to demonstrate that he has the capacity is supported. And the court examiner, through his examination of my client, came to the opinion that he does have the capacity and to make a decision about refusing neuroleptic medication, and that his decision is based on reason and not on a conditions of his mental illness. I believe that the district court erroneously apply the clear and convincing standard in putting emphasis all in his refusal to take medication and his disagreement with his mental diagnosis, while they should have considered all of the other factors in making that decision. And with that, I would rest and I would give up the rest of my time.
All right, thank you, Ms. Hur. You'll have the last word for rebuttal. All right, counsel.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Assistant Attorney General Drew Bredesen, counsel for respondents in this case. The district court heard testimony from two doctors, both of whom agreed that the best available treatment for delusional disorder was treatment with neuroleptic medication. The district court made its findings by clear and convincing evidence and based those findings on facts in the record and concluded that treatment with neuroleptic medication was appropriate. There is no error of law and no clear error of fact. On appeal, appellant argues that the district court did not clearly state the clear and convincing standard and speculates without record support that the risks of treatment with neuroleptic medication outweigh the benefits. Both of those arguments fail. First, the order plainly applied the correct and highest clear and convincing standard. And second, the uncontradicted record shows that the benefits of treatment with neuroleptic medication outweigh any risks. An appellant's speculative offer of additional evidence on appeal fails to demonstrate any error below. And now this morning, appellant also argues that the capacity determination should be overturned, although again, failing to demonstrate a clear error when the district court based its findings on facts and the statutory considerations.
Is it, counsel, is it entirely fair to say that there was no evidence that was contrary to the clear and convincing, or that was contrary to the finding by the district court that there was clear and convincing evidence that the benefits of the administration of the neuroleptic medication outweighed the risks? I mean, he's been on the medication for a year and there have been no measurable benefits to him.
That's not what the record reflects. The record reflects that there has been a decrease in severity and frequency of his symptoms. So there has been some benefit to treatment with neuroleptic medication where there had been no progress at all in his status without it.
I mean, I concede that. Those benefits, though, however, are marginal. I mean, he's still not able, you know, they're not... The administration of the medication is not having the desired effect in this particular case. True?
Again, I don't believe that that's what the record reflects. I think the record reflects that there are benefits that are accompanied with treatment with neuroleptic medication for appellant. But moreover, the larger concern here is that the treatment question on determination of whether or not neuroleptic treatment is appropriate is made based on whether or not a person would find it to be reasonable based on those varying factors that are set out in statute, including the risks and benefits. And because the record shows that there are no particular risks to appellant, apart from the general possibility of side effects, none of which have been demonstrated for any neuroleptic medication administration for appellant, while there are demonstrated effects with one medication, and the possibility of additional positive impacts with the remaining five or remaining four of the five stated in the district court order. Yes, the record does demonstrate that clear and convincing evidence supports that, that it would be reasonable to have that treatment.
But with regard to side effects, we've got Mr. Thompson's testimony that he's not as clear-minded, and it impacts his ability to communicate with others, including, I mean, he focused on being able to communicate with his lawyers for the criminal case. So isn't that a side effect?
The testimony from the treatment professionals were that there were no observed side effects to Mr. Thompson from receiving this medication. There is none that were observed by the treatment staff. It is accurate that may be his subjective belief, but he also believed that he was suffering neuroleptic-based side effects from a medication that isn't even a neuroleptic medication. Ultimately, what the question is whether or not that demonstrates clear error in the district court's finding. And really what that just shows is another basis that the district court did not credit Mr. Thompson's personal testimony in this case. And that does not demonstrate clear error.
So Mr. Breeden, can you clear up something in the record for me? Because there's information that he was on Abilify, I think, but the order in this case is for at least three medications. Was he on all of those medications for the prior year, or is this a change?
So I'm happy to clarify that. The standard procedure in requesting authorization for neuroleptic treatment is to get authorization for four to five typically separate sorts of neuroleptic medications. The treatment team will then apply one at a time and usually stick to just one and then measure whether or not an increase or decrease of that medication will have positive benefits when coupled with the remaining treatment options that are there at the facility. So there was authorization given for multiple, only one was administered, and that's what Ms. Lassen testified to, was that he had only been on Abilify since the last Jarvis order. So proceeding past the clear and convincing standard, which was plainly announced by the district court on page 2 of this order. And again, appellant's brief argues that that is the standard that should have been applied. There is no harm to appellant from application of that higher standard. The district court finding that all facts were proved by that clear and convincing standard protects appellant, and appellant does not argue that the result in this case was in any way inappropriately affected by the way the district court stated or applied that standard. So there is no error of law. Now we proceed to the factual issues, and under the Rabowin case, fact determinations are reviewed in the light most favorable to the district court's findings and are upheld unless clearly erroneous. Now, there is a Spicer issue that is stated in the statement of issues in the introduction to appellant section 1, purporting to raise a Spicer argument. In other words, that the district court's order lacked that particularity to provide meaningful review, but the brief does not actually make that particularity argument or actually challenge fact findings, only arguing that the legal standard was not clearly announced. But even so, there is no Spicer concern here, because the Spicer court was concerned where district courts were adopting varied and sometimes inconsistent opinions on a conclusory basis and not explaining the relevance of facts to their conclusions. And here, the district court did not adopt varied or inconsistent opinions in toto. Instead, it did show how its fact findings informed its conclusions with citations that were supported by the record of what it found persuasive. So there is no Spicer concern here.
Counsel, I want to go back to the court's order. The court concluded that the appellant lacked capacity because he believed he didn't have a mental illness and was unable to balance the risks and benefits. Dr. Doherty indicated that the appellant's decision to oppose medications was a reason one, not based on a symptom of appellant's mental illness. Apparently, the district court did not credit that testimony. But given the preponderance for capacity, why shouldn't Dr. Doherty's testimony saying that that is not conclusive have been credited by the district court?
Sure. So I think it's helpful to really dig into what Dr. Doherty's testimony actually was. And Dr. Doherty did not opine that that Mr. Thompson did not have a delusional disorder. Dr. Doherty conceded that delusional disorder was most appropriately treated with neuroleptic medications. And Dr. Doherty made clear that he was not contesting that diagnosis whatsoever or the propriety of this treatment. Instead, what his testimony was that out of respect for the possibility that these delusions were not delusions, he was not 100% sure that the delusions were in fact delusions. In other words, there's some possibility he can't prove that can't prove a negative effectively. And because of those caveats within Dr. Doherty's testimony, conceding that appellant's symptoms were consistent with delusional disorder, conceding that delusional disorder was appropriately treated with this, and also conceding throughout that the delusional disorder impacts all of those capacity determinations, including awareness of situation, being able to adequately contemplate what the benefits would be of treatment or the consequences of refusing that treatment, and being able to rationally weigh those. And that's what the district court was focused in on in its order, is that those were the actual reasons for a determination of incapacity for appellant is as it was laid out in the district court's order. He did not, and that, I believe that was paragraph 10, he can't state the benefits. He accepting the medications would be admitting that he has an illness, having that lack of insight. And all of these are consistent with Dr. Doherty's testimony. And that is the basis that the district court has to not credit Dr. Doherty's conclusion that he may have capacity to make the treatment determination against that preponderance standard. And so proceeding then to the final determination, which is that treatment with neuroleptic medication is reasonable and necessary. The district court found that the benefits of treatment clearly outweighed the risks. And that finding was based on the evidence that risks were minimal, benefits were happening, and no alternatives would work. And there is no record evidence to the contrary, despite the arguments that are raised in appellant's brief. Specifically regarding benefits, the treatment may allow him to have more flexibility in his thinking. Ms. Lassen testified that delusional beliefs could decrease and the appellant could better assist counsel or progress in his criminal case, that there had been improvement over the prior year where there had been no improvement without neuroleptic medication. Dr. Doherty agreed with all of that. Regarding risks, there was the testimony that that appellant has no particular susceptibility to side effects. He is monitored for any side effects by professional staff and trained professionally and is regularly tested. And in accordance with Ms. Lassen's opinion that the benefits outweighed the risks, the court found that clear and convincing evidence showed that the benefits clearly outweighed those risks and any intrusiveness of treatment. There was discussion of alternatives. Dr. Doherty brought up the fact that he wanted there to be some alternatives, but in his testimony admitted that appellant is already receiving all of the treatments available as is. And Ms. Lassen testified that the talk therapy and behavioral therapy treatments on their own are not enough to restore a person to competency. And as the district court found, without neuroleptic medication, appellant would continue to stagnate in his treatment. So the record shows ample support for those conclusions, and appellant's arguments requesting review are really asking this court to reweigh credibility determinations of the lower court, which is inappropriate on appeal. There is no clear error based on appellant's speculations that are listed in the brief about inherent risks or premature opinions of doctors, or that alternative treatments may be appropriate. There is no record support for those. Each of those has been actually, the opposite has been shown in the record that was developed at hearing. So in short, in this case, there was no error of law or clear error of fact. The district court applied the correct legal standard and made particularized findings of fact, explained the significance of those facts to its conclusions, all of which were firmly supported by the record. Because there is no error of law or clear error of fact, respondent respectfully requests that the order be affirmed. And if there are no further questions, I yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much, counsel. Ms. Herr, you'll have the last word if you choose to use it.
Yes, Your Honors. It is undisputed in this particular case that Mr. Thompson has been treated with neuroleptic medications for over a year with minimum benefits. While there were some indications that some of his agitations and behavioral symptoms were slightly minimized, there is no clear evidence that that is due to the use of neuroleptic medication. It could be a number of things that's contributing to that. One, he's in a controlled environment. Two, he's participating and engaging in groups that's available to him. The fact is, the risk, the benefit of neuroleptic medication in this particular case is not supported by the record and by the finding that it outweighs the benefits. In this particular case, the risk outweighs the benefit in that it is preventing my client from being clear-minded, being able to focus on what's important to him, and that is his underlying criminal matters and being able to communicate with staff as well as his attorneys and being able to plan his defense and being able to appropriately respond and address those issues. There is just not enough in the record to support that the ongoing use of neuroleptic medication against his consent is beneficial or that the benefits of neuroleptic medication outweighs the risk in this particular case. He has mentioned various side effects that has been monitored and ruled out by the treatment team, but there are still concerns of side effects that he's experiencing. And the biggest one is that he is not clear-minded. There is an overwhelming evidence that he is benefiting from neuroleptic medication. And I think what it comes down to it and what Dr. Doherty was trying to say in his testimony is, irrespective of the fact that he has the diagnosis, this particular diagnosis, irrespective of that diagnosis, irrespective of the symptoms that he exhibits, the fact is that he has capacity. His reason to refuse neuroleptic is a reasonable one. He meets all of the criteria for someone having the capacity to make that choice. In this particular case, the benefit cannot be said to be to outweigh the risk. This, there is just no fact supporting that. Even even the doctor, you know, Ms. Lassen's opinion is that there is not a significant improvement in his symptoms with the neuroleptic medication for the past year, other than the behavioral observations that was made. The ultimate conclusion was that there was no significant improvement in his mental health symptoms as a result of the neuroleptic medication. And I think that is critical, and I believe that that is clear error, that there is not a clear and convincing evidence that the benefits outweigh the risks, and that he should continue to be imposed neuroleptic medication when he is reasonably, verbally, and knowingly refusing to take neuroleptic medications. So with that, I would ask that the Court of Appeals reverse the order imposing neuroleptic on Mr. Thompson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted.